The people in my replies, the hardcore women soccer fans, I had never seen anything like before. I always talk about the haters because, like, yeah, I screenshot their tweets. And yes, I tweet back at them every time we set attendance records. But it was a 10-to-1 ratio, though, of stands, of people who love women's soccer and basically were daring me. They were like, don't fucking talk about it. Be about it. Like, I dare you. I dare you to buy a franchise.
Okay, those sound like women's soccer fans for sure.
Yes.
They're awesome. Well, we're wrapping up season one, and what an exciting season it was.
Yes, and you're not going to believe what we have in store for season two.
Welcome to In These Cleats.
In space.
Space. Space.
WSL Roundup.
Let's just get right into it. An amazing championship game. Gotham FC.
Filled with drama.
Gotham FC against OL Reign. Two teams with two very different stories and also with two iconic players that, you know, got their swan song on this very last NWSL championship game here. Paige, I know you were coming in hot with amazing thoughts on the game. So, like, how about you give us, like, your most important things or the things you want to talk about most? Because you were there. You were experiencing it. Hit us with your faves.
You know, I love, like, a true underdog story. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were bottom of the table last year. I think it's really cool. So their GM, Yael Averbush, she's from UNC, longtime friend. And I knew she was going to do a lot with Gotham FC. So she tweeted last year. She was like, I assure you all, we are not okay with being at the bottom of the table. To Meg's point, this position is all too common for the club. Here's why you can have faith in the future of what we're building. She went on to say they're going to hire a great coach for a long-term future for on and off club identity. And, like, that's so overlooked because you want to come into a club with an amazing coach and amazing future. Otherwise, it's like, it's just really tough to perform individually, but also really enjoy your time as a professional athlete. So what she did with Gotham was incredible, rebranded. And to see them come from the bottom of the table and win the championship, although it wasn't Angel City, it was actually really incredible. And I'm really proud of them. You could see, like, how much they fought. And they have some pretty special players. So, Midge Purse came back from injury this year, and she freaking bossed it.
MVP.
On that sideline. MVP, Midge Purse. Ugh. That's a highlight.
Incredible.
I do have a question about Gotham, if I can.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they're underdogs, right? But I've only seen them this season, so I only know them as winners. What were they like last year?
Trash. No.
Okay.
Damn.
No, they weren't bad, but they weren't good. They let in the most goals I've ever seen a team let in last year, which was really unfortunate. They were just not organized. They have really good players. But when you're last and you win the next year, that means, like, any team could win the championship. So Chicago's thinking, they came in last this year. They're like, okay, guys, get ready to win the championship. Like, it's so cool.
It is really cool. Mm-hmm.
Any team can win.
I think it just speaks to how competitive the NWSL is. Like, unlike, you know, some European leagues where certain teams just have so much more money than everyone else, the NWSL, any team could win and move on at any moment. Like, every game feels almost like a playoff game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that does make it more exciting to watch.
There was some real drama out there.
Drama. Okay, can we talk about the third minute when Megan Rapinoe?
It was so sad.
It was sad. And you could tell that Rapinoe was, like, looking around. She was like, who just hit me? Right? And it was non-contact. Yeah. It was non-contact. And she went down. And I talked to some of my teammates. And, like, we all kind of knew it was her Achilles when it's non-contact like that.
Yeah.
And to be fair, she gave it her all this season.
Yes, she did.
The last couple games were insane. She gave everything during our game. She could have saved herself, but she didn't. And so that was unfortunate because she had a great game against us. But so she goes down and we're all feeling for her. And I was like, man, the brain's going to, you know, fight for her or whatever. was really like a story for her in her career. She's had an incredible career as a soccer player, but also off the field. She's inspired so many, not just everyone, but me. I got drafted to Seattle and she told me I was gay. I said no. And here I am with a wife. So thank you, Pino.
Yeah. We owe a lot to
Paige. Yeah, we owe a lot to we all wanted Paige to get married to a wife. So thank you, Pino.
Yeah.
But seriously, she's the GOAT, man. And mm-hmm. Crazy ending. And she's going to have an incredible career after soccer. And, you know, a lot of athletes get injured and she's going to be just fine going through the injury process. But that was crazy.
It was really crazy. But it is like what a truly incredible, legendary career on and off the field.
But let's talk about some insane moments of the game.
Yes.
It started out with Midge Purse rolling down the sideline. No one could tackle her.
She beat three people.
Three players. Yeah. And not just three people, Jess Fishlock, who we just had on the show, who I think is one of the best players in the world.
Yes.
Yeah, she got around them and placed a perfectly well ball in the box. And Lynn Williams, of course, scored because she knows where to be at all times. And their connection is incredible. That goal was super exciting. But then, 28th minute, Rose scores 5 minutes later. Of course, some three-class athletes just doing their thing.
That woman is a machine.
It was so cool.
She's machine.
So,
yeah.
A machine. She was a machine. Every time she had the ball, it felt exciting.
She's so good. I get like scared when she's on the field.
Yeah.
That's how it always feels.
So before the half, Lynn Williams was taking it down the sideline because Midge and Lynn was taking it down the sideline all game. Earned a corner. Midge puts this perfect ball in and Esther Gonzalez scored a brilliant header, yep. Which is also an incredible signing for Gotham. She's such a great nine. She's good at, like, she's good on the ball. She's good with awareness. She's good at passing. Good at
Is she
everything.
That tall? And she didn't look tall.
No, she's short.
Okay. That's what I
she's
thought.
She's short, but she's smart.
No, she's short. And she scored that header. I was like, that's a short woman who scored an amazing header.
I'd never seen a header goal like that, I don't think. That was incredible. In the ball hard, like that has to hurt, right? Smacking off your head and then hitting it that far into the goal. Like, and then she just kept going.
Yeah, I mean, no, it hurts. It hurts.
Yeah, it's wild how y'all play.
Well, that put Gotham up 2-1. And then to end the game, it wasn't just like a normal ending. It was actually like a very bananas ending.
Well, it was such a good through ball with Rain. There were, obviously it was the 96th minute and they had literally like not even one minute left to score. So great through ball. And Mandy, the goalkeeper for Gotham, came out. I think she had to do this.
I think so
game.
Too.
And well, she could have like chested it or headed it or like, but she could have missed the ball. So she handled the ball right outside the box. It's obviously a clear red card. It's just the rules. You stop a goal scoring opportunity and crazy drama. And so you have Neely Martin, not her first time, but her second time going into goal and has to like get ready for this free kick outside of the box. It could be the Rain's last chance. And I was like, don't take it, Rose. Don't take it. She's done enough for the game. She put the game on her back, and then she took it, and it hit the wall. And I think Gotham did their best to defending the box the last couple minutes because it was crazy, and they did really well. That ended the game. But wild, wild.
Wild, wild, wild.
Truly insane.
Well, it was very cool to see Allie Krieger go out with a win and the rest of that Gotham team. Very well deserved. And it was also wild to see Christy Mewis's Instagram stories after that. Just the team getting absolutely lit on Bud Lights and smoking cigars so and like just getting so drunk, I imagine. Because like after playing a game like that, I think you get drunk pretty fast.
Yeah, yeah. You're desiccated.
You're desiccated. You're, like, so like yeah. Any drop yeah, of alcohol is just going to make you.
Yeah.
Plastered. Blackout.
Well, since we were talking about the championship, obviously it's the end of the season. And sadly, it is our last episode of this season. But It has been an absolute pleasure doing this podcast with you both. And I'm excited to watch next season and cheer you on, Paige, and hopefully get to do this again.
Hell yeah. Cheers at season two.
Let's do it.
Let's do it, season two.
Same show, different outcome.
Ooh, yeah, and let's go Angel City in the championship.
Yeah.
Woo. Yes. Angel City will be celebrating next year.
We're going to be down. Lauren and I will be on the sideline of the next NWSL championship screaming for you.
Great.
We are very excited. Our guest today is an entrepreneur and investor, founding companies like Reddit, Initialized Capital, 776, and Cloud9, just to name a few. He is also a published author, podcaster, advocate, and philanthropist. But the reason he is here today with us is because he is a principal owner of Angel City Football Club. Please welcome Alexis Ohanian.
Thank you. Woo-woo. Thank you, Ian Page. Very excited to be on the pod. Thank you for having me.
And your dog.
My dog, Maximus.
And your dog. Wait, who? What is your dog's name?
This is Maximus, named, of course, after a certain character in Gladiator. So if you ask me how often I think of the Roman Empire, it is literally every day.
Every day.
Every day. From the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed. Thank you so much for agreeing to sit with us. We're so excited to have
you. My pleasure.
Let's just get into it. Something fun to kick us off. The new NWSL trophies were unveiled last week, and they are stunning. I know you were driving the force behind getting new trophies. Can you tell us a little bit about that process and why you felt that was so important?
Well, look, thank you. I wouldn't say driving force, maybe like impetus. I am trying to use relationships I have, experience I have, to not just help Angel City, but try to help the entire sport, the league, and just be useful. And, you know, I did not know anything about women's soccer until 2019. And we can get into that origin story. But, like, my job is to, like, as an entrepreneur and as an early investor, is to just pay attention to trends and see things maybe before other people see it. And be curious and ask lots of questions, which annoys my wife and my daughter actually now. But one of the questions I kept asking was, why do our trophies look so bad? And no one had a good answer. And the good news is with, you know, change in the NWSL, when the new folks came on board and I asked that question, they were like, gosh, you're absolutely right. Let's change that. And this is also this is a business cliche, but I always try to come into a situation, not just with a complaint, but also a solution. So don't just show up with the problem, show up with the solution. I said, look, trophies aren't good enough. I know we can talk to someone, maybe at Tiffany's, somewhere in that LVMH umbrella, who can actually help us design something that looks as great as the women of the NWSL are. I think it was I hate to pick on the WNBA, but there was a WNBA, I think, MVP trophy that went viral for being really tiny.
The small one that Kelsey Plum held up. Yeah.
There you go. And again, I think one of the biggest advantages I have in a situation like this is my naivete, because I just come in with fresh eyes and I can say, well, that seems lame. And again, none of this is because it's charitable. This is because if we want to build billion-dollar franchises and raise the level all across the board, things like that matter. Because the iconic image that someone who's not already a fan of the NWSL is probably going to see, if they see one image every year, it's going to be the image of the championship trophy, right? So those moments matter. There's a whole – I can get in the weeds on this. There was some it was actually, you notice all the teams now are doing like footage on the ground, sort of sideline footage, and then of the stands and everything. That's because I hired a couple of shooters basically with smartphones. I said, all you're allowed to do is bring smartphones and a stabilizer and record content on the sidelines of the fans. Nothing that violates any of the media rights, but record this content with these amazing cameras so you get that great depth of field. And start putting it out on social during matches just so that we can have real time, high quality content so that, like, yeah, we've got to keep leveling it up, you know, on the TV screens. But like, let's do what problem can we solve right now that will help someone who's sitting at home bored, scrolling through their feed, see the NWSL in a matter of seconds and be like, oh, that looks great. Because we know the women, y'all, Paige, y'all are already bringing world-class soccer. Mm-hmm. So why shouldn't everything else about
look
it feel that
class.
Good?
Yes.
And precisely yeah.
All, all those details really matter.
Matter.
So that like the full yeah. package. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, my wife is like, she's always like, man, I don't even want to watch this on TV because the quality is so bad. And I'm like, I know, and it's 2023. Like, we have better cameras out there.
It is getting better. And yeah. It's still not good enough. You're right. And it was a striking thing. I mean, in 2019, part of the reason for my, I guess, now infamous tweet storm was because I realized that matches were on Lifetime.
Yeah.
After the soap operas.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here and I'm just like, seems like not the best place to be broadcasting high quality professional sports. And you started peeling back the layers of it. And even as a total outsider, you're like, oh my God, there's all this squandered opportunity. And what's been so heartening is I do think, and again, I'm not taking credit for having gotten a new trophy, but like what you're seeing now is, and it's not just me, right? There's a ton of new owners across the league who are coming from maybe different business experiences where they just are used to, like, there's no way you build a multi-billion-dollar company unless you're thinking about stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And what was so wild is that for so long, the people who own these teams weren't necessarily thinking of them as potentially billion-dollar franchises, but that shifted now and you're starting to see it, and it's awesome. And there's obviously so much more work to do, but, there's a lot of people, including the folks at the actual league level, itself, who are saying like, yo, this is a problem. We're going to fix it. Here's the solution. And I think it was actually a creative director at the NWSL who helped design the trophy with Tiffany's. And the thing, I mean, it looks amazing. I dare to dream that one day I could get to touch it.
Same. But I dreamt about it every day and now I won't even see that damn thing. And
I'm rooting for both of you to touch the trophy.
Yeah, well, y'all, the players for sure deserve it. And like I said, it's going to snowball because every little incremental step that I know for diehard fans, diehard women's soccer fans should not be satisfied. There's so much more work to do. But I would hope they see the progress and this momentum and get excited because it's going to keep snowballing. And that momentum, even those images of the trophy at the end of this season, no matter who's holding it, those trophies are going to leave an impression.
Yeah, I'm crying inside.
On a ton of people, I know. But they're going to leave an impression on a ton of people who are going to see it and go, wow, like I always knew the American women were the best. It turns out now we actually have this amazing league here where so many of the very best soccer players in the world are playing all the time, not just every 4 years at the World Cup. So it's happening.
Speaking of like the snowball effect of women's sports and watching, and one of my favorite tweets from yours is the legacy of undervaluing women's sports over the last 50 years won't just be a legacy marked with sexism and racism. It'll be an example of gross business incompetence. And I think that really hit because as individuals, and we always fight for brand partnerships, we always fight and we get nothing. We always were looked as a charity, basically, but the numbers are being shown. You tweet it all the time about the growth. And now
is
it's
it
just
too
a,
much?
no, because look at the comments. It hits people like it doesn't hit people right away. It takes 10 years and the constant driving in their head that, people actually watch women's sports. But where does that snowball effect start? Like brands, TVs, does it take more top executives like yourself being at the top to understand the business model? Do we have older male owners that don't even care, that don't have daughters maybe, that don't even care? Like where does that start?
I'm happy you read my tweets. And I have to give credit. And you should put up my March 19 tweet storm where I say like I need to buy an NWSL team because
and Alex Morgan
Alex responded and you know that is all Alex. I DM'd her. She was playing in Orlando at the time. We met up. We spent an afternoon together and I was just taking notes, learning from her. And it was her initiative that really pushed me over the edge to say, okay, I have to do this now. And then I started talking to existing team. I won't name names, but I was talking to maybe two or three owners. In fact, one reached out to me because they saw my tweet and they were like, can you please buy my team? And
and you know nothing about soccer.
Within 10 minutes of the phone call, I was like, oh my God, it's like you're a used car salesman trying to unload. You're trying to pull one over on me to be like, hey, get rid of, like, I'm trying to get rid of this thing. You take it over. And you know, even at the first board of governors meeting, like there was a definite perception from a lot of, I mean, they're all dudes, but from a lot of folks who I think historically thought of it as the C word, as a charity. And they said things like, oh yeah, I've got a daughter or a granddaughter and I have this thing and blah, blah, blah. And it loses money and no one comes and blah, whatever. And it was surreal because I had never been in a room where, and I know I've been spoiled, but like I've always been in rooms with people who are trying to be the very best, who are trying to build something lasting and impactful and yeah, successful financially. And I was suddenly in a room with people who are ostensibly in positions of power, who were very comfortable being complacent and mediocre, right? They were really comfortable being like, yeah, you know, only 1,000 people come to our games, whatever. And it's like, but why would you want to own a thing? Why would you want to build a thing that you were happy not caring about and being that mediocre? And I think what's so, look, everyone has a role to play. I know I have some advantages. Let's set aside the business and entrepreneurial experience. Like I know I have now 2 daughters. And I know, yes, it is true. Olympia was kicking around a soccer ball in the Alex Morgan jersey during the World Cup. Like all those things are true. And Serena did say, like, you're not going to, yeah, because I said, like, wouldn't it be great if she played the national team one day? And Serena did say, not until they get paid what they're worth. Those are all true things. And those were great story points and true things. But I don't want anyone to think that I did this because I have a daughter. Very proud girl dad. Very proud. It's not because of that. And obviously the other thing to point to is the fact that I'm married to someone who isn't just the greatest, but who also proved unequivocally that in America, you could have a sport where the women's game is as or more popular than the men. And I bring up that stat all the time. Even if there isn't an American playing, let alone a Williams sister, the US Open still gets more viewers for the women's final than the men. And that's the byproduct of decades of investment, equal pay, all the things Billy fought for. And then obviously all the things Serena and Venus represented and fought for and accomplished. And yeah, that was not even generational talent. That was, that was exceptional, right? It's not that every sport needs that, but they were the ones who broke through and proved a model now that is unequivocal and it still lasts to this day. And so I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, okay, well, I've seen it happen. Maximus has seen it happen. Oh boy. And so I already knew that there was an example of it. And again, none of it was based on no one's filling an arena because they're like thinking it's charity to watch women's tennis. Mm-hmm. They're filling an arena screaming their faces off because it's really careful. It's really entertaining and it's fun. And that's what sport is about. And so to actually answer your question, I think everyone has a role to play in this. And what really sparked it was long before Angel City. What sparked it was the 99ers winning in such epic fashion. And that planted something in the American psyche that connected American soccer greatness with women. And that was the other thing I realized. And when, I remember I hosted dinner in LA right before COVID. And I asked everyone, I was like, hey, so, I've got this women's football team here, it wasn't clear when the season was going to start, obviously with all the COVID stuff, but when the season starts and we have a team, would you be willing to come to a match with me? And everyone at the table was like, oh my gosh, yes, that'd be so fun. Great. And one person actually said no. And I was like, oh, this is fascinating. Like, I want to know why. And one of the arguments they made was like, it's just not that interesting to me. And, the WNBA hasn't been successful. And I don't know if this will be. And also, like, I just really prefer men's soccer because that's like, quote unquote, real soccer. Now, at the time, I wasn't very well armed. So I was just, again, in fact-finding mode and learning mode. Mm-hmm. Now, in hindsight, it's great because I can tell them, like, one, if you actually like watching people play soccer, the women spend much more time doing that because they aren't rolling around flopping, faking injuries like the men do. Again, that's just data.
Yes.
That's just data.
Okay. And I hope this person is listening to this.
I hope he is. But that's one part of it. And the other that was so interesting was I did learn, you know, it's the huge advantage we have in soccer is that, you know, the average casual American sports fan, I'm pointing at myself here, doesn't need to know anything other than if you close your eyes and are told, think of American soccer greatness, you cannot think of a guy. You are only thinking of women. Whereas the challenge the WNBA has always had is the psychological reality of just telling someone, think of American basketball greatness. You've got a long list of folks seared into your psyche. And that's not, it's absolutely overcomable. You just have such an advantage in a sport like soccer where greatness has always been defined by women. And so I think if I'm really giving flowers properly, it started back then that actually laid the foundation so you'd have, you know, generations of footballers, because y'all weren't doing it for fame and glory. You were doing it for love of the game. And that's amazing, right? And then you have diehard fans who have built that foundation. And I think it's been so rewarding to then see how that has now spread globally. As frustrating as it was in this World Cup, I disappointed, as I'm sure every American was. But I actually still came out of it happy because globally, this was such a win for the world and so many tipping points in so many different countries about the women's game that is going to be great. And I think this is redeemed team territory. I'm old enough to remember the dream team, and I'm old enough to remember that other situation that happened, and then the redeemed team. And I think 4 years from now, we're going to go out and just annihilate folks. That'd be great.
I hope so too.
I love that you emphasize that it's not just because that you have daughters that you're so supportive of women's sports. Cause I think
just
that
love
is, I know. And I think that is just so important that like, that doesn't need to be part of the conversation. Like you can just enjoy it because you are a human that enjoys seeing people do excellent at the thing that they've devoted their life to. Yes. That being said, what was the decision that led you to Angel City, and like, do you remember what that pitch was like and why you landed with LA versus maybe some of the other folks that spoke to you?
It had hit me by around the second or third existing owner conversation that I did not want to inherit someone else's team. I had done, you know, when I came back to Reddit in 14, it was a turnaround and, you know, 40 employees. It was my company, but I had left for about 4 or 5 years. And there was a lot of hard work to be done. Credit to Caitlin, who's my founding partner at 776. And she had come in as our head of people and culture and really helped us turn that all around. Did not want to do that again. And I just didn't have the courage for it. And so then it was about, okay, creating a new franchise. And it was an exec at, I think it was LAFC, the men's team in LA, who said, hey, like, I know you've been looking for a minute. And I don't want to name names specific, but I'd hit up MLS owners because I was like, look, I need a facility to actually play in. From my point of view, I can just rent this thing from you, right? Because your problem is you need to fill seats even when the men are not playing and you can't have concerts rolling and all this. I'm just like, this is great. This is good for you. It's good for me. Cool. And then eventually, it was an exec at LAFC. I said, hey, these three women really want to get a team together. They don't have any capital, but they've got a lot of moxie and they're really excited and yada, yada, yada. And got introduced to Kara, Julie, and Nat. And it's wild. I was in the same industry as Kara. We maybe crossed paths once or twice, but didn't really know her. And then Nat, I had met maybe once or twice at like random celebrity type thing, but again, didn't know her. And Julie, I had never met before. And, their pitch was obviously very much in line with how I saw the world and the opportunity. And frankly, I think there wasn't much of a decision. Like it was like, I already knew I wanted to start a team or buy one. And once I was sure I didn't want to buy an existing one, then it was just a matter of starting a new one. And then, you know, it just, it was, it just made sense. I don't know. Then obviously Serena being from LA gave me a little bit of credibility. Mm-hmm. We have a home there, but like I'm not from LA. It's wild to see how, you know, all these dots had to connect and mm-hmm. yeah, it's kismet. It's life. What I knew for certain was there were a ton of people who every 4 years got so irrationally excited for the U.S. women's national team that I was like, okay, there's a giant market for that. And there was such a fierce, I mean, that original tweet, the Alex Morgan and then shout out, this is actually I got to always give her props. This was the jersey she signed for me that day. She technically signed it for Olympia, but I kept it for myself. Olympia's old enough, she might get it back. But the people in my replies, the hardcore women soccer fans, I had never seen anything like before. I always talk about the haters because like, yeah, I screenshot their tweets. And yes, I tweet back at them every time we set attendance records. But it was a 10-to-1 ratio though of stands, of people who love women's soccer and basically were daring me. They were like, don't fucking talk about it. Be about it. Like, I dare you. I dare you to buy a franchise.
Okay, those sound like women's soccer fans for sure. Yeah.
Yes. They're awesome. And again, naive me. I think the best part, one of the best lessons from creating Reddit was being able to very quickly see and value passionate fan communities, like irrationally passionate communities. So when I saw that, I got even more excited because if you have, you know, in tech, we use cliches like find your first 100 fans, your first 1,000 fans, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Like you need to have these really, really passionate, just irrationally passionate supporters to know that you've built something that people will care about. Now, the other side of it is you have also, by definition, irrational haters. But I actually got excited by them too, because that also showed me that the only reason they are hating so irrationally is because there is something that is so threatening to them in what these other people love. And I never want to be investing, because I have to invest when there's zero, right? When the company is just starting. So if there is any semblance of tremendous love and or tremendous hate, that's usually a good sign. What you don't want to be is milquetoast. You don't want to be some average thing that no one really feels any kind of way about, because you're probably never going to grow big enough to be that successful. And so the fans were there and they've showed up. And to credit the team, they went out and from day one sought out those communities. And you know, there was a couple that actually had the sign of they were in an LAGC match, but they had the sign bring NWSL to LA and, you know, connected those dots super early with those day ones and those supporter groups. And it was a very grassroots based community movement. And it's great. Kayla now works with me at LAGC, which is awesome. So I've got her big brain, you know, building community there and storytelling there. And it's just like the fans were there. You all, players were there on the pitch. Like this is, I really do think in 10 years, 15 years, this will seem like one of the more obvious investments I've ever made. And people will be like, yeah, of course, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But really, it's a credit to all the folks that have been there doing the work and, you know, made it look easy. But what's been exciting has been now since you just see so many people who have rallied behind the team. And I mean, they went out in subsequent rounds and brought it. I mean, there's like I actually don't even know. There are so many like part owners in the team now on the cap table from across the industries in LA. And it's because I think it's just struck a nerve and got so many people from a variety of backgrounds excited and hyped. And, you know,
I know now people are feeling like FOMO about it. I feel
really?
Like. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for sure. You know, we've read that you created all of the mascots for your companies that you started, and we've wondered on the show what Angel City's mascot could be. Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, I got vetoed on this. So, Angela, who is our GM and is amazing, like, perfect example of someone asked me once. They were like, what's your guiding philosophy as a pro sports team owner? And growing up in the DC area, I said, I imagine what Dan Snyder would do in every situation and then do the exact opposite. And so with that, Angela handles all football stuff, soccer stuff. That's all her domain. And I really trusted Julie, Kara, and Nat on this mascot issue. Cause again, I love mascots. I wanted a Valkyrie, which I know like, If you think of Angel, Angel City, the Valkyrie is like the warrior angel.
Sort of, in
Norse mythology. I mean, there's a Valkyrie in the whole MCU thing, which I guess kind like Nat is technically Thor now, but okay. The idea was, if you Google Valkyrie, imagine there's a supporter group that's riffing off the Valkyrie thing. So I feel kind of validated, but it would be this like angel warrior.
Okay.
Google it. It's a thing. So
I'm Googling it right now.
I'm going to Google it in a little bit here.
Is that it?
Yeah.
After soccer, this is going to be my number one job if it gets approved, just to be the Valkyrie on the side of the field.
Yeah, in these cleats is going to start a grassroots Valkyrie campaign on your behalf. Okay.
I mean, only if you like it. I do. I know soccer doesn't technically have, like, traditionally have, like, mascots, but, you know.
But why not?
I don't know. I always think, especially now with a couple of kids, I dressed up as a dragon for my daughter a couple nights ago for this little like scavenger hunt around the house. And it was one of these big inflatable, it's actually in the back there, inflatable red dragon costumes. And she was so delighted and she knew it was me, but in her mind, she's six. She was like, oh wow, there's a giant red dragon in my bedroom. And she didn't really know until I took the costume off. And I'm like, how did you not know it was me? Like, who else did you think this was? But she really believed. And so that just got me thinking. I can't, kids love a mascot. They love.
They do. I mean, we need our own Gritty or like Benny the Bull.
Yes. Same.
I mean, the only reason why I went to, I think it was the Denver Nuggets basketball game, is because they have a stunt professional, and this mascot gets paid like $600,000.
Yeah, they paid a lot of money.
Like way more than my salary, but it's something. We have a lot of stunt professionals in LA, so I think we need to bring this back to the table.
But this is one of the balls from season one of Angel City.
That's awesome.
I don't know. It was for sale in the store. I didn't ask for a freebie or anything. I bought it.
Wow.
And I have it sitting here on my shelf, and I just think about the provenance. Like this, I hope in 10, 20, 30 years will be a really awesome story for my kids, for my grandkids.
Yeah.
And again, because I like investing in dope shit, that's it. I'm so floored with how much has now grown in the orbit of U.S. women's soccer. And in these cleats is a great example of that. Like this is all stuff that's going to feed into an ecosystem. And the more success you all can have, the more, you know, more other podcasters you all are going to inspire who are going to want to compete. And that's going to make everyone better. And it's great. I think 10 years from now, we're going to have these little mementos and artifacts from this time and think like, wow, look how far we've come. And obviously there's still so much more to do. But you know, y'all are at the forefront of something that I think you're going to be really proud of in the years to come. And obviously Paige will be holding that trophy next season.
Next season.
Next season.
I'm hoping you come to a game soonish, because I saw you last year a lot when I was still going through my injury, but I would love to be out there playing with your daughters. They're super cute. And
we will make it so.
Yes.
Olympia is technically the youngest owner in pro sports. Actually, oh, that's awkward. Adira. So I created a trust when I did a chunk. So I took a big chunk of my investment in the original, like buying of the franchise and everything. And I put in a trust for Olympia and any future kids that Serena and I have, which made Olympia the youngest owner in pro sports.
Incredible.
But now Adira technically is.
That's the benefits for being a younger sibling. Sorry. Yeah.
Yes.
And so she just inherited. So I got to give the crown. Awkward. Awkward.
Well, Olympia paved the way.
She did.
Yes.
She did. You know? She loves Angel City too. She's, there's some good footage of her running around on the pitch after she says I yell too loud. So I have to be quieter because it hurts her ears, which is fair. That's tough criticism to hear, from your kid, but that's fair. And I'm convinced once someone, now obviously we've got great seats, but we routinely bring friends of the firm, friends of the family, founders, like it is, we try to keep that sweet pact. Obviously, family and friends of players, like your sister. Sierra, shout out, Sierra. It's just like there is this. There's an experience, and I know. Obviously, I'm hyping up my own squad, but like, I think allegedly it exists during other NWSL matches that are not at BMO, but it's an experience to be there and watch, and especially as a parent, it is such an easy thing to go take your kids to because you can be a sports fan, you can yell your face off, and yet you don't have to worry. Like I went, I love NFL. Like I said, I grew up in NFL, love NFL, went to a game a few weeks ago. Like that's a fan experience I wouldn't take my 6-year-old to. Now I was part of the problem.
That's what I love about Angel City.
And that's what I love about Angel City because I get to scream my face off just like I was at an NFL game. But I just know that the environment is, it's going to be a good time for everyone. And again, I think that's part of the, you know, entertainment experience that fans are looking for, but do not sleep on it because it is raucous and loud and passionate, and you're going to feel great bringing your whole family to it. And that's special. And that's like an edge now that I wouldn't have appreciated until becoming a parent that now is like all day long. And I know we've indoctrinated Angel City fans based solely on that.
Have you brought people that like have never been to a soccer game ever and now they're like, oh my gosh, I am a diehard Angel City fan?
Oh yeah. I have folks on my team at 776 who like have who jokingly refer to sport, like they talk about sports ball and like yay sports, who have never cared about sports, maybe like Quidditch, but only because it was in Harry Potter.
That's not a real sport.
Diehard fans. I know. No, that's how like so powerful funny. The experience is. And the other nice thing about soccer is it's such an easy sport to explain. Offsides is still annoying to explain, but like, you know, it's something you can explain to a 6-year-old and they're locked in and they're ready to go. And you try going through that same exercise with 90% of other sports and you start really going down the rabbit hole and losing people's attention. But it's a beautiful game for a reason. Shout out though to Angel City though. Hell of a turnaround this year. Wow.
Thank you.
Wow. I mean, no quit. I'm so proud of y'all. I cannot, I try not to speak on any of the soccer stuff because like I'm an idiot about the soccer thing. But from Angela on down, y'all just, I mean, and shout out to Becky. I mean, Coach Tweed just getting it done here.
She was awesome. Really, really fun to play under her.
Yeah. And again, I'm sitting here just like, yay, scoring. This is good. there's no sophistication to my fandom here. But to see the way the team just dug in and turned it around, and it was awesome. So a lot to be optimistic about for next season. And yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you holding that championship trophy, Paige.
And I'm going to dream about it every day.
A bigger shield.
And a much bigger shield. Or a cup.
Much bigger shield.
I think they're open to feedback. Like if everyone comes out and just says, hey, you know what? It should be a golden soccer ball. Or I guess that there's some other trophy that's for that anyway.
Yeah. Or like our version of the Stanley Cup. You know, something huge.
Like a big ass cup you can drink
like
out
of. Like a big, like something like, yeah.
Okay, cool. Like I just needed, my only request is like make it look awesome. Mm-hmm. So if all of the players think, yeah, that's objectively awesome, we win. Because then we know all the fans are going to think it's objectively awesome. And then, again, we win. So they'll do it right. They'll do it right.
My vote is for a cup that you can drink out of. It makes the after party.
Yeah, that makes it. That makes it so fun. Thing.
Okay, so let me get on my rant. Y'all, so, and this is the other thing. And maybe I had an unfair edge here. I barely played sports growing up. But one of the things that happens when you play sports growing up is you get exposure to women athletes as well because you see each other practices. You're just
can
like,
I ask what you played?
So I played soccer for 9 years from kindergarten until high school because my parents wouldn't let me play American football, which is what I really wanted to play. And then I finally did in high school. And I'll send you an embarrassing photo of me my senior year. So you can see, I know they were so right, Paige. You know, in hindsight, I was like, Dad, you nailed it. Like I needed those brain cells and I was never going to have a career playing sports. So great job. But you got used to this idea of like the, what is it? The breadth of women athletes is just as broad as male athletes. What do I mean by that? Like, I think for casual folks who, and maybe some of the ones who, you know, leave me the angry replies, they just have no idea about the fact that women athletes, by and large, and obviously Serena's experienced this pretty acutely, are really not allowed to be anything other than like icons historically, right? You have to, there is a very specific lane that if you're going to have a big platform or have any frame in the broader sports world, it has to just be like, yes, equal pay. Awesome. And very important. Role model for young girls. Yes. Awesome. Very important. But then it usually stops. And if you've spent any time with women athletes, you know that that's obviously not just like any humans. Like, it's just not the entire end of their existence, right? The exciting thing that's coming right now, and podcasts like this are a great example of it, is people are now finally getting to see that women athletes are all of the things that male athletes are too. And so, yes, some of them love to party. Some of them are hilarious. Some of them are like Kobe level intense and serious. There's everything in between, right? And so those storylines haven't yet fully like reached the like mainstream of sports awareness. Mm-hmm. And when they do, they will melt people's brains, because the other part that I'm betting on that I feel so confident about is, you know, male athletes have never had to be, they've always been able to focus on just playing the sport. And that's part of the reason why so many of them are so terrible at like, they're not telegenic. They're not that creative. Like, you think of the social media storytelling, like, it's just not that good. It's not that compelling, but they've never had
to, they don't have to
fight for it. They've never had to be creative or thoughtful. And again, if you just think about it from first principles, like, women outperform men on social already on every platform. They produce more content. Their posts do better. They consume more content. Like, it will seem obvious in hindsight 10 years from now why women athletes are so popular and successful, because they're winning the attention war where it actually matters, which is here in feed. And you see this now with the generation coming up, thanks to name, image, likeness deals, right? There are college players who are making $1 million+ a year in brand deals because they have the following, they have the audience, they're the storytellers. And it's going to be really hard to not have the rest of the market catch up in terms of leagues and teams and everything else. Cause if you're bringing in that much money, it's not because of charity. It's because you have attention. It's because you have influence. And as more and more of those storylines break into the mainstream awareness of sports, it's going to be so much more interesting than the men. Like, it's just going to be more interesting and more compelling and more entertaining. And why do we follow sports? Like, it's not for the logo on the jersey. It's not for the owners on the team. Like, it's for the players. That, and I have to shout out Rob and Ryan, who I love and hate. Because they took a team that was, what, fifth rate Welsh football team and made millions of Americans love them. Why? Yeah, Ryan is good looking and Rob is semi-famous.
He has a good face too.
I know. No, he's very good looking. Actually, on my
speaking from two lesbians.
I know.
You all can give great objective feedback on the male form. Here's what's so powerful. Like, they realized they could tell these stories of a community in Wrexham and players who no American should care about, but humanize them because there's a common threads that connect us all as humans that we can empathize with, we can sympathize with, we can relate to, we can laugh about, we can cry about. And God, they've nailed it. And those are the kinds of storylines that are going to, and no offense to those dudes, but I mean, now they've got their women's club, and I think they're going to see very quickly just how incredibly compelling that is. But these are the kind of avenues where I know women athletes are going to thrive in the next decade. Because again, this for all the reasons, this is the attention that matters, and this this tsunami could not be coming at a better time, because all of traditional sports is focused around traditional media deals with the big network and the blah, 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 and you tell your story on match day. My North Star has always been, and this is the same thing now with LAGC, is we have to tell these stories of our players and our community every single day. They're not on the pitch or on the golf course. Like, make people care about the humans every other day there's no match on, so that when they are doing that exceptional thing, there are stakes beyond just the score. But you actually care about the individual players and their struggles and their setbacks and their successes. And it's right there. You're going to see it again 10 years from now. We're going to run this clip back and everyone's going to be like, wow, like, how did we not see this coming? And it's like, well, if you've just been paying attention to all the amazing athletes who also happen to be women who are creating great content, like, it was already there for you. It was right there. So
sorry, to add to that, there's there's an interview with Mary Earps, goalkeeper for England. And this is a question. So there's a lot of problems with access to us. We had to grow the game. So we engage with our fans all the time. We respond via social media. We
stay after every match.
Yeah, we do for hours, mind you. And maybe in 2 days we're traveling across the season, and we feel bad when we don't get to every girl because, you know, that changed our lives. And like, will that have to continue, or is it the ESPNs that come through that do 30 for 30s to humanize us, or what does that look like?
Well, I can't announce my next thing yet. I try to call my shots. Like, I don't know. I think all the things I'm saying are in part because I've just been thinking about it a lot lately and trying to figure out how to do more there. I think practically speaking, it will be a good problem when, well, okay, it'll be bittersweet. It'll be a good problem when the game is so evolved that it's just not physically possible to stay after for hours to sign enough autographs. Right. And it'll be a bittersweet thing. Cause I know, look, it'll feel bad. And, I think it will be a milestone for y'all and for the game, which is that there are just so many humans here who are so fanatical that you just do not have enough time to actually be doing all those signings. And so I actually think it'll be a bittersweet positive when it's impossible. And in the meantime, y'all need to get to NBA Basel matches and make sure to get your autos while you can, because I've seen it firsthand. Like you all will run laps around the entire field multiple times, just making sure you get every single selfie, every single sign, every single card, notebook. Like, it's remarkable. And that's y'all have done and continue to do the work to build those first 1,000 fans, so to speak, those first 10,000 fans, those first 100,000, like the diehards whose life you very well could change because you took that time. And at some point y'all have been so successful that it actually won't even be possible to do. And it won't feel great, but hopefully it feels more good than bad, because it means the game's in a whole nother level.
But you're right. It'll be so bittersweet. It'll be just like, yeah, like back in my day, we used to get an autograph after the game, but like, but now we can't because it's grown so much. Like, as a fan, I'd be so happy. Like, it would be bittersweet, but I would be like, this is awesome to see, to have seen that growth from the beginning of Angel City to and the NWSL to 10 years from now. It would be amazing to be a part of.
Well, I feel like I'm in the right hands. Blessed to be in LA, blessed to have you as a principal owner, and we're so thankful for having you on. If there's any other advice you could give to anyone, please tell us, because we're all fighting for the better world.
I would continue to encourage all the players to keep pushing and keep fighting for the things you want to get. And I have to be very careful with my choice of words, but like, at the end of the day, I really, really believe my capacity as an owner, as a sports fan, as a human, the league is going to be successful directly in proportion to how successful its athletes are. The thing that can never be lost is, it's not about the owners. It's not about the league. It's not about the teams. It is about the human beings on the pitch giving their life to play the sport that we love. And that's one thing I try. It's hard when you're close to it. Like, it's a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong. It's wild. What, as I've, especially as I've spent more time around sports, I mean, I've seen the ultimate version of it is in Serena and the kind of orbit that she has around her. But it's bonkers to watch firsthand. Like, people lose their minds to be in that orbit. And sports does that. And obviously, when you're at the pinnacle of it, it's even more, the gravitational pull is even stronger. But you see it in women's soccer, you see it in golf. Like, I'm getting exposed to it more and more. And the thing I'm always trying to remind my team about, even myself about, is none of us really matter. The only people who actually matter are the ones doing the work on the pitch. Mm-hmm. And as long as we can keep that front and center, and I know the fans will have no trouble doing that because they know that better than anyone. And obviously, well, the players, that's how we win in the long term. So make no mistake, I am thrilled to have a small role in all this, but like, the players are the reason. They're the everything. You all are why people scream and pack an arena with 22,000 plus, because it's those realities on the pitch that help us exercise so many of our own personal demons. This will get a little dystopian, but I'll give you one more thing. I know there's a lot of stuff going on with AI right now. The technology is real. The breakthroughs are real. Over the next 10 years, every other form of entertainment is going to be cannibalized by AI in some way. And what I mean by that is, like, user generated content did a lot to, if you look at the amount of views on or time spent on YouTube versus Netflix, it's comparable, except YouTube doesn't spend any of the money making content. Netflix spends a ton of money making content, but user generated content turns out really good. AI generated content will mean a proliferation, not just of more content, but also better programming, better targeting. So every feed we look at 10 years from now is going to be so perfectly tuned. You're going to get to listen to your podcast exactly when you want to, because the feed, whatever that feed might be, knows exactly what you need at the right time and the right content. It's going to serve it all perfect. And there's a dystopian version of this.
Politically.
Which is, well, that's part of the echo chamber.
It can get really divisive.
Well, and I think we will gravitate more towards the spaces that reflect what we want to see. And we'll get in these cycles.
Scary.
It is. I told you, you can get dystopian. Now, I'm going to give you a little silver lining, which is, if we don't, if society doesn't fall apart, that we will gravitate towards the better user experience, which is just giving us more of what we want. But it'll also dull our senses, right? We're still humans. We're still, like, biologically programmed to want to feel things. It's sort of against our nature to just be getting exactly what we want all the time when we want it. And my bet is sports is the last pillar of entertainment that will never fall, because we will pay hard-earned money to watch sports, to consume sports. We have to consume it in the moment. We can't, if we miss it, we miss it, right? You can always watch that movie next week, but if you miss the match, you miss the match. And we'll go because it'll break our hearts. We'll go because it makes us exhilarated. We'll go because we'll actually get to feel what it means to be human. And every other music's going to have, like, a kind of area in the middle where, like, live concerts, like Taylor Swift shows are still going to be Taylor Swift. Those are almost religious experiences, right? But there's a huge chunk of entertainment right now that takes a lot of our time that won't feel as substantive when it's so, curated. But sports and all the things around sport are going to feel, they're going to be durable and they're going to be real. And that's part of the reason I'm so bullish on it broadly now, is because I think it will be the last place we go to really feel human. And so why do we feel human? Because we care about the adults playing a kid's game, right? As absurd as it is, we care so much about the stakes of these humans who we feel a connection to playing a kid's game that we go, and it makes us cry, and it makes us delighted, and it makes us angry, and all the things.
That was such a good roundup, because I ask all the time, man, why do people care about me kicking a ball into a net? But that you said it perfectly.
Yeah.
It's like a human experience with emotions, and just watching.
And it's like the best story and drama every time.
Yeah. And it's real. There's only one NWSL champion every year. Like there's only like the, you, it, we make up in business everything. We make up our lists. We make up our rankings. We make up all these things, how much revenue or how many employees or what, like it's all made up. It's bullshit. Sports, because it is zero sum, unfortunately, sometimes, right? Like you just know you win or you lose. It's so true. And then remember, there's only a fraction of people right now who fully understand that story today. There will be many, many, many more for years to come. And it's still early days.
Well, yeah, we appreciate you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you all so much for watching our first season of In These Cleats. Paige, you're the best.
You're the best.
No, you're the best.
No, you are.
Okay.